This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, a wide-ranging conversation with our veteran analysts, John Fortier and Jim Kessler. This will be a bittersweet show because, my friends, your Encounter moderator and Press Conference USA host is planning to retire at the end of July. Yes, in 1 week. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. After 24 years of rewarding service as a broadcaster with the Voice of America, I have decided to move on. I will miss you, my faithful global audience, and longtime loyal panelists like John Fortier and Jim Kessler, who have been stalwarts of our U.S. politics edition. I would like to pay tribute to our guests who have enlightened us on issues spanning East, South, and Central Asia, Africa, Latin America, and the greater Middle East. I will miss interviewing them as well. In the second half of the show, we'll talk a little bit more about my long career that started on the night shift at VOA. We call that the graveyard shift, as a newscaster, and how I worked my way up to this challenging but tremendously gratifying job as director of the three current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News. But first, every news outlet is reporting that former President Donald Trump faces a possible second federal indictment after receiving a so-called target letter. Former U.S. President Donald Trump said last week that he had received a letter from Special Counsel Jack Smith stating that he is a target of a grand jury investigation into efforts to overturn his 2020 presidential election defeat. Analysts say that such a letter would represent the clearest sign to date that the front runner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, Donald Trump, may face federal criminal charges around his efforts to remain in power after losing the election to Joe Biden. A lone senator, Tommy Tuberville, a Republican from the state of Alabama, is holding U.S. military promotions by blocking the government from paying for transportation for servicewomen who travel to another state to access abortion banned in a state where they are stationed. Democratic Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger, a former CIA analyst, said in a tweet, quote, "I can just imagine that there are foreign adversary nations and their leadership and their intelligence officers looking at the very reality that one singular senator is able to stop the promotion and the appointment of more than 250 members of our military," unquote. With that, she is signaling that Senator Tuberville's hold is undermining U.S. national security interests. And there is the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, historically a bipartisan affair. The bill authorizes funding to the tune of $874.2 billion for defense spending and also sets policy across the Department of Defense with a focus on threats from Russia and China. So why is the bill so controversial this year? We'll discuss it all, as well as the ups and downs of the Republican presidential primary contest and what and who is behind No Labels, an ostensibly bipartisan interest group that wants to field a third-party presidential candidate to avoid another potential Trump-Biden matchup in 2024. Critics say the effort would backfire and benefit Trump. Well, for more on the U.S. political landscape, we turn to our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. That's our center-left policy group, also based in Washington. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome back to the program.
Great to be here. Thank you, Carol. Thank you for all the years.
Well, gentlemen, we'll talk about that in a minute. I certainly reciprocate. But John, let me begin with you to talk about the big issues. So former President Donald Trump indicted again, or rather, we see it coming down. What are the implications for him as running for the Republican nomination and just in general for this country?
Well, I think we've talked about this before, that there are many different cases proceeding in different jurisdictions, some of them state and some federal. And at least the initial response of the Republicans has been to rally around the president. So the short-term response has been that Donald Trump has been strengthened within his party. He's still not a guaranteed nominee of the Republican Party, but is it a better place than he was? And is certainly the favorite to be the nominee. And I think it's also, you know, whatever your politics, difficult to see how an administration and their Justice Department, which tries to remain somewhat independent, but still it's that administration, can really use the legal powers of the federal government to go after a candidate against them. And we are in an election, essentially. We aren't voting, but we're running an election. We have people raising money and debates are coming up and maybe they'll participate or not. And certainly by the beginning of next year, when we have votes or even 90 days before that, the Justice Department is often very cautious and has policy against really going after political figures, especially ones running against the president. And so I'm not sure I could see how this is going to work out. I don't think that Donald Trump is going to be taken off the table and not be able to run for office. I'm not sure if the current political situation that he is helped by all these investigations is going to continue, but it is certainly for now. So I think ultimately this will be decided by politics, and this will be not a minor matter, but I don't think we're going to see the presidency of the United States and who's president next determined by the outcome of a legal case that puts a leading candidate out of contention.
Okay, Jim Kessler, so that's the politics. On the other hand, we're talking about in this particular case, the indictment that may be coming down, you know, the January 6th insurrection that former President Trump allegedly helped to promote, the overturning of the legitimate election results. So notwithstanding politics, it's not really the fault of the Biden administration, one could argue, or the Justice Department, which is independent, to just keep pursuing the law and trying to hold someone who has allegedly participated in such a interference in the peaceful transfer of power from holding that person accountable. But let me get your take on what is going on with this second indictment.
Carol, it's really hard to take the politics out of this. And when Joe Biden is asked about this, he doesn't say anything. Like, you can see that the administration feels this is an awkward situation, even for them. And I was just trying to imagine a situation like, let's say Donald Trump was not running for election this time and these court cases were happening. I think the American public and the Republican Party would be reacting quite differently, because not in all of the cases that we're seeing against Donald Trump, but certainly in some of them, and I think this one having to do with January 6th and another case pending down in Georgia having to do with the overturning the election there, Donald Trump is really vulnerable from a legal standpoint. But the politics is very awkward for the Republican Party, and it's very awkward for the Democratic Party. Ultimately, I agree with John Fortier. Donald Trump will win or lose based on the number of votes he gets at the ballot box, not what happens at a courthouse.
All right, gentlemen, let me turn now to the so-called NDAA, John Fortier. As I said, the National Defense Authorization Act. I wonder if you could talk about why it's so controversial this time in this particular House of Representatives. A lot of critics are talking about playing the culture wars. You know, this is a National Defense Authorization Act, rarely has much controversy, but the Republicans in particular are loading it up with amendments having to do with everything, it seems, but defense. Talk about that.
Well, we have divided governments. We have a Republican House and Democrats controlling the Senate and the presidency. And when these battles come to a head are over budgetary and authorizing funding matters, where something usually has to get done. And you're right that the NDAA is a particular bill related to our defense that is kind of must-pass bill every year and had a history of being one that was pretty bipartisan. I will say this is not the first year, I think, that we've had some controversy. It has started, like our politics, to become more engaged in the controversies between the parties over the last 10 years or so. So it's moved in that direction. What I think Democrats are unhappy about is that Republicans have put in several measures regarding, broadly saying, culture war issues related to health, abortion, diversity, other things that relate to military policy. And that's in a House version that the Republican majority passed. And now we'll have to have an ultimate version get through the House, Senate, and to the presidency. And either there'll have to be some compromises or we'll have some stalemate for a while with not the best consequences. So I see this as just a feature of our politics becoming almost all of the things we pass in Congress, some of which seem to be non-controversial, are really in the crosshairs of the party politics between Republicans and Democrats.
So over to you, Jim Kessler, to talk about specifically what many of these Republican members of Congress are trying to get passed with this bill. We know that it will not pass the Senate in this version. It's going to be in front of the Senate for them to fashion their version, which will be far less partisan. We know that this package sailed out of the House Armed Services Committee on an almost unanimous vote weeks ago before it was loaded up with GOP, that is Republican priorities, a lot of which had to do with other issues that really don't have anything to do with our national security.
Yeah, you know, look, there's a growing Republican viewpoint out there that the United States military is weak because it's woke. And, you know, that is a talking point that you hear. And there is a attempt to unwoke the military. And also part of the subtext is among those same Republicans that are making this case, they're not real thrilled with the United States helping Ukraine as well. Like there's disagreeing with some of the mission. Just a couple points on this with the military. First, the military has historically been the tip of the spear in the United States government on some of these cultural touchstones. It's really one of the first governmental institutions to desegregate in the late 1940s. There was gays in the military in the 1990s. There was women entering and being allowed to be in combat roles. So you're looking at an institution right now that is 45% non-white and now 15% women. It is a different military than we had in the past. Look, we have the best military in the world. America is right now is leading the world, and it's on a bit of a winning streak. Our allies have come together. Our adversaries are a bit shocked at how we've come together in the face of the Russian invasion. I hope, you know, Republicans will back off on this because this is a high point for America and its national defense right now.
And in a related matter, before we go to a break, John Fortier. We have, as I said in my introduction, the lone senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, also emphasizing, I guess, culture wars. He apparently wants to pressure the Pentagon to reverse a policy ensuring abortion access for service members in the wake of the Dobbs decision, simply traveling to get access because now with the Dobbs decision, as we know, abortion is no longer considered a constitutional right. The states regulate that, but it is delaying the smooth transfer of power at the highest echelons of the armed forces. Many defense experts say this is undermining U.S. national security. John Fortier, how is it that one senator can be allowed to do this?
It is a sign of changing norms. We've seen norms on these types of issues change over the years. In particular, it certainly has been a long tradition for senators of both parties to put a hold, to essentially stall at least a nominee of a president to get another message across, not because they didn't like the nominee, but to bargain, to get something in return or to stop something. I think people didn't appreciate was that military promotions, which seem like they're not political, actually do require a Senate vote also. And so that is a loophole that Senator Tuberville is taking advantage of, moving this use of holds into a new area, which, again, is going to potentially affect various parts of the military or delay or have some effect. One other thing I will say, though, is this is policy of the Defense Department. And when you were saying before that there was politics on one side, this is new policy for the Department of Defense to pay for women to travel to other states to have abortions. We had a consensus for a long time that even pro-choice, pro-life, that we did not fund or pay for abortions at the federal level. That consensus has been breaking down all over the place in various bills, and we're fighting that battle everywhere. But here we are, a new policy of the administration. And the last thing I'll say is, while it isn't what we're expecting, at least right away, a majority does have an ability to override that hold. And so a Democratic majority holding together, really wanting to push the envelope, would be able to overcome a hold. It's just that we don't like to do that because we want to protect senatorial privileges. And if it were to come to that, I mean, I think that's another bridge we could cross, which would have some other implications, but it's not an absolute hold that Senator Tuberville has on these promotions.
Jim Kessler, senatorial privileges aside, several news outlets report that some Senate Republicans are raising concerns about Senator Tuberville's hold on defense nominations over the Pentagon's abortion policy and even publicly distancing themselves from this Alabama Republicans approach. You know, it sends a very dangerous message, say many critics. Even a Pentagon spokeswoman said that Mr. Tuberville was setting a, quote, dangerous precedent that puts our military readiness at risk, unquote.
Right. And we're seeing the confluence of two things. One is ramifications of the Dobbs decision that it's going to echo in so many places in this country, and the political ramifications of that we're just starting to see. We saw it some in the 2022 midterm elections, and we'll see what we see in 2024. Another thing that we've been seeing in the last few years, particularly beginning with the nomination of Donald Trump in 2016, is a meekness among the traditional wing of the Republican Party that is against a lot of what's going on within the Republican Party, but is sort of harumphing and complaining and almost silently dismissing it, when instead there just needs to be a stronger and firmer voice out there. I mean, Mitch McConnell does not want to see what the senator of Alabama is doing, and he has occasionally lifted his head and said a few words on it, but you're just going to have to be tougher on this if he wants to corral the Republican Party.
Indeed. Well, the Republican Party does seem to be the party of former President Donald Trump right now. Let me go to a very short break. You are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And we are discussing the U.S. political landscape as I host my final U.S. politics edition of the program. As always, you may find our Encounter podcast on most of your favorite podcast apps, and you may download the show from the webpage, voanews.com/encounter. Our shows will be archived on the VOA website should you wish to gain access to them online. I'd like to give a very big shout out to some of our top fans, Tony Zola, based in Thailand, Juan Carlos Dominguez from Havana, Cuba, Ibrahim Abba and Chidi Goodness from the great nation of Nigeria, Ray Ondoro from Nairobi, Kenya, David from Mogadishu, Somalia, Mark Verstig from Down Under, Ismail Mobasher, currently based in Rome, just to name a few. There are many more. We appreciate all our fans. So thank you for your interest in our current affairs programs, particularly Encounter, all these many years. So John and Jim, let's go over just a couple more issues and then we'll have a little conversation about our fun times together over these past many, many years. So let's go back real quick. John Fortier, your favorite Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, but his star seems to be fading. What's going on? What are the prospects?
Well, I think we're in a position not so different than we were earlier in the summer. But if you went back 5-6 months, you would have said, look, Ron DeSantis, he's the clear number two. There's a chance for this to be a real 1-2 person race. Other people who would support other Republicans are going to be reluctant to support them because the best chance to beat Donald Trump is by going with Ron DeSantis. And he had a chance to really both tap into the Trump vote as well as some of the anti-Trump vote. Look, I think from the big picture, that's still true, but his star has fallen a fair amount. Some of it had to do with the indictments, which really rallied the party around Donald Trump, made Republicans consider him as a candidate. So it looks a little worse for DeSantis. I will still say Ron DeSantis still raised a lot of money. There's some stories about how they're spending it and not being efficient enough in the campaign, and maybe there's a shakeup, but he still raised a lot of money, and we'll see if that continues. If it doesn't, I think it might be something that Ron DeSantis' chances continue to go down. I think there's a smaller chance, but still a real chance that Ron DeSantis can be that alternative to Donald Trump and be a strong candidate and perhaps go into the January and February primaries with a shot to beat someone who's as strong in the party. Those chances are less than they were, but those other candidates, the Republican Party, still have really not risen up, and I have a hard time seeing any of them being able to capture the same potential place that Ron DeSantis is in the party right now.
Well, turning to you, Jim Kessler, do you think Ron DeSantis can eventually become the alternative to Trump, given he really has lost a lot of oomph, so to speak, in these past weeks? And I'd like to get your take on this no labels movement. How concerned are you, as a Democrat in particular, that this is going to undermine President Biden's ability to prevail in the general election?
So on your first question, the answer is no. I think Ron DeSantis is a dead man walking. I've never believed he had a real shot at Donald Trump because from the beginning, his campaign seemed to have the wrong theory of the case on how you win. He was running in the exact same lane as Donald Trump, a conservative populist. I'm just like Donald Trump without the baggage. There isn't room in that lane. He needed to find a completely different lane to run in, a lane that's about the future and a conservative, exciting future. He chose not to take that lane. Somebody else is going to find that lane and be the challenger to Trump. I think Trump's going to win the nomination. Let's move on to No Labels. So No Labels is a Washington-born and bred organization that is kind of pretending to be an outside of Washington-born and bred organization that is seeking to run a third-party presidential candidate in the race. It has raised, according to their own press releases, $70 million. All of their donors are secret, and they want to recruit a candidacy from the middle, which sounds wonderful, with one Democrat and one Republican running for office. Their ideal choice for that Democrat is Joe Manchin, Democratic centrist from West Virginia, and the vice presidential candidate they would like is Larry Hogan, a moderate Republican former governor from Maryland. The problem is third-party candidates in the United States have never won, have never come close to winning. The last time a third-party candidate won a single electoral college vote, let alone 270, was 1968 with the segregationist George Wallace. They will not win. They will not get a single electoral college vote, but they can alter the election. And if this dream ticket from the center got 5% of the vote or 8% of the vote or 11% of the vote, the majority of that vote would likely come from Joe Biden voters, and they could turn the election to Donald Trump. And I'll just finish with one thing, Carol, on this. In a one-on-one race between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, I am confident that Joe Biden wins that race. But in a one-on-one race plus a third-party spoiler candidate, the odds go appreciably higher that Donald Trump becomes president. In fact, I think it's his only avenue to becoming president.
Interesting. Well, it certainly begs the question about who is really behind this no labels. But unfortunately, we don't have the time to discuss that. Nonetheless, John and Jim, I was wondering if you want to share any reflections that you have about our time together this last decade and more. John, in particular, I think you were just with me ever since I started in this particular job in 2004. You are literally the longest running panelist, I would say, among all my programs, John Fortier.
It's hard to imagine that your time is coming to an end with Encounter, because it's really been a very important part of my career, and I've really enjoyed it. We tried to go back and figure out when the first show was. We think it was after the election in 2004. We're pretty sure about that, but maybe the archives are not as perfect and easy to find these things. And I think we calculated that we've probably done at least 150 shows together. That's a lot of time, and lots of them with Jim in the last many, many years. You know, I think this is a show that is really about substance, and that's the thing that, while our politics has changed a lot since 2004, and often not for the better, and become a lot more circus-oriented and less substantial, this show has really been about substance, but not boring and not naive, really about substance. And that's something I think we could use a lot more of. And it's a real tribute to you, Carol, for being able to get at these hot-button issues, important issues, talk about it with the world in a way that really does this show and our country some credit.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, John. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, and I was just saying, I think my first show was 2016, but I'm not really sure. I really don't know. The years all run together.
Jim,
but,
yeah, you preceded that. You probably don't. I remember well, you came on many shows with regard to gun safety legislation, et cetera. And then you became a regular on this program. We had many other left of center partners for John, but you have become the regular.
Yeah. I mean, I remember coming on for some specific issues and then this becoming a regular gig. I love doing the show. It's a great show. It's informed, not inflamed. I learn something every time I do this show. I learn something from John. He'll bring up some point or some fact that makes me think and that I get to put in my head. And I also think that one of the reasons why this show works is I don't feel I'm supposed to come on this show and beat John. And I've been on other formats where I'm on with a Republican and really it's like, did I win the segment? And winning the segment on this show is, was it a good show? Was it worth it for people to really listen to this and feel like the 30 or 40 minutes that they invested in this show made them better informed and enjoy their day more and be better citizens of their country?
Well, thank you both for your kind words. And I think it's a tribute to the mission of the Voice of America. And that has always guided me, as you said, to inform, not to inflame, try to be as even-handed as one can be, fair, right? Fair, not necessarily both-sidism. And a lot of times, you know, you surprised me, Jim. I thought maybe you'd say something and then you said something else. And I said, that's great. Again, not necessarily providing what we call Democratic talking points. And the same thing with John, not necessarily Republican talking points, but just your well-informed insights about these issues. So on that note, I want to thank you both. And I'm afraid that is all the time we have on this, my last U.S. politics edition of Encounter. Thanking my terrific guests once again, John Fortier, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, I will miss our conversations, as I'm sure our audience will. It's been a great ride, and thank you for always agreeing to do the show. Jim, your inimitable humor, and historical references, right? And John, your unparalleled expertise on the workings and politics of our government, from the esoteric electoral college to all aspects of our three branches of government. I'm very, very grateful for your participation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again, this time for my last edition of Encounter, for a discussion on U.S.-Africa relations, and that will be next week, right here on The Voice of America.